Yeah, I would be asking that. I was thinking it when I was hearing the book. I was like, you're going to ask that, right, Lewis? Mm-hmm. And Lewis did. And while I was watching the movie, I was thinking, you're going to ask that, right, Lewis? And he does.
And then it just like, he's like, whoop. Now it's Thanksgiving. How long has it been? We don't know. The weather never changes. We only see that Missy's brought back the laundry, so it must be a Monday. We see Ellie changing a decoration from a pumpkin to a turkey. So obviously some time has passed, but there's no real definition.
Right. And so Lewis is playing with Gage, and then Rachel's just like, I just don't like the idea of you being away from your family on Thanksgiving. And he's just like, but that's why I'm not going. So I'm nowhere near your parents, because I don't like your parents and they don't like me.
Well, and this is, I'm sorry, but like, you wouldn't have this conversation with all of your stuff packed by the door. You've talked about it. Plane mm-hmm. tickets are involved. Yeah. This stuff is a done deal. So mm-hmm. this conversation is so muted to me that I'm like, just no, put it back out. Put it back out with the recycling. Except it's not recycling. It's garbage. Put it in the garbage.
I hear our recycling isn't being taken by China anymore. So yeah, it is literally garbage no matter which way you cut it. And there are moments where they do exposition pretty well. Like when you first meet Judd, he's talking to Ellie and he says, you know, I hear your father's going to be the new doctor at the university. And that's kind of something that I would say to a kid, you know, like, I hear this is what's going to be happening, you know, with you. Mm-hmm. And then
and a kid spouting off is often really good way to learn some information. Mm-hmm. But this contrived mm-hmm. family drama,
no,
which only makes Erwin a good character later on.
A good character?
Yeah, because if you have dramatic feels about somebody, it's a good character. And I have dramatic feels about him.
I mean, I definitely feel something towards Erwin Goldman, but it's not good. Anyways.
Yep. But we don't see him for a while.
Right.
So
Lewis, he shuffles them off to her family, and you know, Lewis is like raking stuff in the yard, and he's, you know, trying to get at it a little bit, and then the phone rings.
Yeah, he takes exactly two rakes full of leaves and then is like, I better go put this rake away.
He does it again later on. But for right now, he gets, you know, the phone's ringing and it's Judd saying, oh, Lewis, I think your cat's over here. You should come over.
There's a dead cat in my yard.
Yes. And so they go over, and I want to, for you applauders, since you're not seeing this movie, you're listening to it, I want you to know something. When Lewis gets this phone call, it is during the day. So as in the sun is out,
mm-hmm.
and he goes over to Judd's and he sees his cat, because it's in Thanksgiving and it's all frozen and everything. Or it's got that nice little like frost over it.
It's frozen to the ground.
Yeah, that cat's dead.
Yeah, well dead. But then it's like, what are you going to tell Ellie? This is back and forth.
Yeah, I'm not going to spoil her vacation. I'll tell her when she gets back.
I don't want to make everybody upset. I'm just going to keep it to myself.
Yeah.
And then
Judd gets a bright idea.
Oh, Judd.
Judd.
Honey.
I like you. I like you. But mm-hmm. we would not have a movie if you had just like been like, yeah, let's go ahead and just like bury the cat in the actual pet cemetery instead of going to the creepy twig place.
Yeah, the Indian burial ground.
It's a Mi'kmaq Indian burial ground. It's behind the creepy twigs.
We're about to get introduced to it because he's like, get your cat, follow me. Like, they put the cat in a trash bag. He just gets a shovel and starts leading him apparently through dude's own backyard, through the doctor's backyard, goes to the pet cemetery, and then in a very callbacky to 5 minutes ago fashion is like, we're going up, we're not gonna bury him here, we're gonna bury him over there, and points over there, and then he's like, oh no, we shouldn't go there. No, I know the way.
Yeah. Oh, we're gonna break our necks if we go over on those twigs. He says, no, I've rocked this place a couple of times, I know exactly where to step.
So the doctor follows him up this pile, it looks like, of twigs and stuff.
Without question.
No question at all. Like, here's the thing. I had to listen to freaking Tasha, Crosby, Rachel talk about the tension between her spouse and her parents. But this dude who's just like, my cat's dead. I don't want to upset my wife or my daughter, who's been obsessed with death since you took us to the cemetery either yesterday or 4 months ago. And like, he's like, okay. He's like, okay.
Okay.
And like, just follows him up this twig hill.
Right. And just like, just make sure you don't look down, or what is it?
Stop or look down.
Don't stop or look down. And you know what? Lewis doesn't stop and he doesn't look down.
But he pratfalls down that hill real good.
Yeah. And then there's this weird POV shot of like Judd over Lewis. So you see a weird POV shot of Lewis looking at Judd, and then you see this you don't see a POV shot of like Judd looking down at Lewis, but the camera's kind of positioned over his shoulder. Yeah. So and then they get up and they continue walking.
We're at minute 28 of this film, guys. I call this the Lord of the Rings walk, because they are walking, they're not only have they walked through the woods and over a twig hill and they're past cemetery, they're now they're walking through a rock quarry and a whole bunch of piles of stone.
Just keep walking. Sorry,
I don't know what that's from.
It's like, just keep swimming. From Finding Nemo.
Oh yeah. No, I get it now.
Yeah.
No, okay.
Sorry.
No, that's okay. My walking sing-song reference is, I've got a new way to walk. Walk. That's from Sesame Street, from probably 1989.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so
I just want to know at this point, I mean, we've probably lost half of our audience already.
It's only the sound of the loon down south in Prospect. The sound carries. It's funny. Yeah. It still doesn't work. I did that for Naomi earlier and it still didn't work. I had one good joke in like the 8 episodes.
You are highly amusing and it wouldn't be a great show without Interplay. So
thank you.
You're invaluable. Don't dismiss yourself.
I feel like I am the rice to your teriyaki. It's a good combination.
You know what I feel like? I feel like you're the cooked rice. No, wait, you're the rice to my telephone dropped in the toilet.
I don't think you're a telephone dropped in the toilet. You're teriyaki. Aww. Yeah, you're the meat. You're the sauce. Aww. But I'm the
a staple that keeps this 3/4 of the world alive.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Just saying, I need you.
Okay, no, that's okay. That's
okay.
What kind of plate am I?
Oh, you're one of the separated plates, so the sauce doesn't touch the rice.
You're the plate and the silverware and the table and the chair.
And the chopsticks, because we can use you for everything.
Yes, like even laundry.
Yeah.
Sorry, that was an inside joke. It's an inside reference.
to the lady who taught me to use chopsticks by cleaning her lawn.
Yeah.
I went camping with a lady. And this will never make it into the podcast, but I went camping with a lady.
Naomi.
Sorry.
Naomi.
I know, you're going to just have to edit this out.
Sometimes
later.
Silence is better. Sometimes silence is better.
Jonathan.
Let me tell you a story about
why my goodness,
silence
stop.
Is better.
Jonathan,
I love our podcast.
Let me spread my legs out like a man and explain to you how much I want to turn
Dr. Creed, and I'm going to be like, what are we even doing here?
Sometimes.
I love our podcast. It's so good. Okay.
Sometimes silence is better.
Jonathan, you made the joke. It's solid. It landed. People giggled.
I have no more microphone. Okay.
Did your microphone die?
No, I cut myself off.
Oh.
You're going to have to bury me in the backyard if you want to bring me back.
I would bury you in the backyard.
If we had, like, Shazam powers, I think we could bring me back into the microphone. But I think I took me out.
Forever?
No. Just so I could take my own...
Take your own advice. Sometimes silence is better. You, like, faded yourself out. I get it. That's a good joke, honey.
So they leave. I tried to go on with the podcast.
Oh, my God. Oh, man.
You know what he's doing, though, right? He's referencing the video. because it kept stuff. Anyways, so they leave the woods and they get to cliffs. What?
It's a plateau at the top of. There's trees around, but they actually were in a national park and they bulldozed an area to make this happen. And they had
got to bulldoze an area in a national park to make a movie.
Exactly. Get a permit first, of course. And there's this structure of spiraling rock. Little piles of rocks, and then it's got some crisscrossy parts on it. I have no idea and no ability to reference if this is actually any kind of Native American symbolism. They're just like, this is a burial ground of the Mi'kmaqs.
Yeah, and it's kind of a weird scene because the camera's at this weird voyeuristic angle. It's the audio. There's like this echo when Judd and Lewis are talking, and then when Lewis starts burying.
Yeah, it's like, bury your cat here now.
Yeah, you got to bury your own, even though it's not his cat. It's Ellie's cat.
Well, you paid for it, so it's yours.
Well, we're going to do this now, whether you want it or not, apparently, because nobody's stopping. No, we're Judd.
Just getting a whole mouthful of, okay. And dude, he's like, the rocks are stony. I'm going to go over here and have a cigarette. He, like, doctor raises the pickaxe, hits the ground, and it sparks. And then it does a cut, and then...
It's, like, later in the day.
It's almost dark.
It's dark. Dark because it was light, and I want you to remember that, because it wasn't until the third showing that I realized what they had said. Sorry.
Okay. Finish the thought.
Well, okay, so he goes ahead and buries his cat. It gets dark. They go back to the house, and then the phone rings. And Ellie is just like, hey, daddy, I got toys from grandma and grandpa because they're trying to buy my love, which you can't actually do. Because when kids get older, that's not something that works. So she talks. Anyways, so she brings up the fact that she got toys from grandma and grandpa for Thanksgiving.
All sorts of neat things.
Yeah. And then she's like, how's church? And he's just like,
Well, here's the thing. When they're walking back to the house, they hear the phone ring and dude takes off running. And then friggin' Judd takes off running after him, right? He gets the phone, he misses the call, right? And then dude sticks his head around the corner and he's like, just remember, don't tell him what happened. Although dude doesn't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
He's just like, don't tell him about church, I suppose. Judd is telling him to keep the secret. But he doesn't know what secret he's keeping, except for not to tell Ellie about the cat being dead. And then he makes I think this is where he makes his stonier soil reference.
Yeah, the soil of a man's heart is stonier.
Which is like an incomplete thought.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry. So I was waiting for Jonathan to get up the stairs, yeah. And I was just looking back and forth because all of a sudden it occurred to me is that's not a complete thought, is almost a complete thought. And then I was like, well, how are you going to finish that up? And I don't know.
That's okay. I mean, Judd didn't know how to finish his statement.
Okay, so he calls and mother-in-law picks up the phone and is like, do you want to talk to Ellie? Like, really curt. And
kind of like, do you want to talk to your daughter? Or they're in
not.
Chicago.
They're Chicago. So yeah. Do you want to talk to your daughter? Because apparently that she must have called a bunch of times. But his daughter's being really intense. Because whenever she has a thought, she perseverates on it. She thinks the thing over and over and over again. In this movie, she doesn't let go of anything. This kid is rabid, as far as I'm concerned.
How's church?
He's fine. I haven't seen him, but he's just probably doing great, being a cat, doing cat things.
Well, make sure that you make sure that you keep him inside the house so he doesn't get run over by the road.
Okay, I will do that.
Kiss him for me.
And then you see him like physically shaken, and he's like he's like, what's a natural thing for me to say? What's the natural thing? You kiss your own cat. And she's like,
you want to talk to Gage?
Mm. Oh, and then Gage gets on the phone. Okay, I wrote sheesh after her conversation.
I know.
And then Gage gets on the phone, and all he says is,
hi, daddy.
I love you. And I'm like, cutest kid ever.
Oh, he's so cute. Sorry.
Okay, so the next scene is...
That's another scene where he's like raking a little bit, not getting everything in the yard, and then he's like, I'm gonna go put the rake away.
Right. I call this scene Here's Church.
Oh, what my note is, church is back and you're gonna be in trouble.
Hey now, church is back.
Yeah, he does have like the best reaction to seeing your dead daughter's your daughter's dead cat coming back.
I believe this is his second pratfall.
Oh yeah, this is his second.
Yeah, he pratfalls down the hill. And then he, like, the cat freaks him out and he falls against the wall in the garage.
Multiple pratfalls, because this is not the last.
There's at least one more.
Yeah.
And, but I'm like, now Church is a real asshole. And he, like, he calls him over, tries to feed him some food, and he picks up this cat in this way that's very alien. But, hey, at least I will say that this is the part where the movie starts to pick up pace, because this is our first really supernatural thing that's happened.
Mm-hmm.
Picks up the cat, holds it like it's an alien. Claws him in the face.
I would claw him too if he was holding me like that. Because, mm-hmm. like, at one point he has his hand around the neck and he's like moving the neck because, like, they make mention of it in the next scene when he's talking to Jed about
so
it.
So let's just jump to the next thing because it's going to happen anyway.
Yeah.
They're having beers at a table, I think.
Yeah.
They keep having beers together.
Yeah.
And then,
it's a motif.
Yeah. Judd is just like, he's like, the doctor's like, I'm not a vet. He might. I mean, maybe I just buried him. I keep telling myself that he buried him alive.
Right. And Judd's like, no, it was, you felt his neck. It was like ball bearings in there. And then Lewis comes back and says, I don't know. It was dark. And it was like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't dark. It was not dark. He did it in the morning. It was light out. Light out.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm not crazy.
Okay. But here's my contention with this scene. Because I wrote it down. He wrote, his head swiveled like it was on ball bearings. Yeah. Right? And I'm like, no, it didn't.
Yeah.
Because that cat was a hockey puck.
He pulls the cat when Lewis pulls the cat off the ground, like it comes free like sticky tape.
Yeah. Okay, so then I mean, there's so much to cover, and I call this the sad dog flashback. Judd talks about his dog Spot, I think it was, who got an infection or just got cut up by some barbed wire and gets buried. So the dog comes back in much the same manner, encounters Judd's mom, who's hanging stuff on the line. I mean, it's a very brief scene. It's important because it just establishes that this has happened before, but the asshole's a dog too. Fix it in editing.
Do you want to just say that?
Sorry, the dog is an asshole too.
The line that I took away from this scene is when Judd says, a man doesn't know why he does things. And I'm like, you should.
Right? I mean, maybe I'm just blessed, but I don't have such stoic men in my life that they can't be like, things are effed right now and I feel weird about it. And I don't know what to, like, just admitting the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really sad my dog died, and I'm sorry your dog died too, but death is a part of life.
I know.
Seems like a perfectly natural conversation to have.
I just don't know why I do things. I mean, I beat my wife, I drink too much, I just don't know why I do things.
Wearing these overalls, I don't do a damn lick of work around here.
I went ahead and took a walk, and I walked into some and you know what happened? I kept walking, and I didn't clean off my shoes. I just walked around everywhere, just a little bit here, a little bit there.
Instead of cleaning off my shoes, I just started calling them floors. God. All right. Here's where I wrote in my notes, foreshadowing so heavy it could be a YouTube makeup tutorial.
Lewis asks Judd if anyone has buried a person.
He knocks all the beer bottles over. He's like, what? No.
Why would you ask such a thing? He's like, super defensive.
But it's like the natural thing.
Yeah, I would be asking that. I was thinking it when I was hearing the book. I was like, you're gonna ask that, right, Lewis?
Mm-hmm.
And Lewis did. And while I was watching the movie, I was thinking, you're gonna ask that, right, Lewis? And he does.
And then it just like he's like whoop away from it. So now we go to the bathtub scene.
Man doesn't know why he does things.
Know why you do things. Or find somebody to help you figure it out. But don't think that burying all your stuff in the forbidden land is gonna, like, fix it.
Buried in the backyard.
Let's go to the bathtub scene, because this is a really great scene, because it's pretty good.
Okay, so this is when I saw the scene, I was like, and this is why we need more female directors. And then my note says, sorry, objectifying a man, my bad.
No, I'm down.
Yeah.
I'm down because he's got a tasteful amount of body hair. You don't see any nipples. Not a single one. They keep it cut above that part of his chest.
Maybe if there's a...
Jonathan's hollering from the other room. He's just like, stop talking about other men's nipples. it was in our vows. I'm not allowed to talk about other men's nipples.
Jeff Goldblum.
I didn't talk about his nipples.
Oh, we don't see any butt. We don't see any of that V that goes on for guys.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We see, like, his legs just above the knees, and we see his chest just above his nips.
Yeah.
And That's it. Yeah. Like, he slides into the water. You don't even see that. Did you notice that water was yellow?
No, I didn't.
It's pretty yellow. I mean, it comes out of the faucet clear, but like when he lays in it, I'm like, did he use a bath bomb or is the pipes rusty or whatever? So he puts a wet rag over his face and he's just having a, my cat's back from the dead. I need to recollect myself moment.
And then dead rat. I'm glad you thought that was funny.
The director lets it land, like the moment. I mean, the rat lands, and then the director lets the moment land, and then there are, like, the feet are like little puffy stuffed animal looking feet. It's just this dog toy looking thing. It's got a little blood on it, and he is acting like he just got bit by something. He's like, flings the rat off of himself, gets up, thinks to, he sees the cat. He's like, how did you get in here?
Doors closed. No way a cat can open doors.
He was already in there. You just didn't see him, as far as I'm concerned.
There is a camera shot before Lewis gets into the bathtub where we see him closing the doors, and it's up again at like a high angle. And so I was like, maybe Church is just like chilling on the ceiling with a rat in his mouth, like you know, spider cat.
Nosferatu style. He's like upside down on the ceiling holding a rat being like, this is awesome.
That's actually, I mean, I was thinking spider cat, but yeah, Nosferatu makes more sense in this case because, you know, they're both undead.
Okay, so the rat drops. He screams, gets out, sees a cat, towels himself off because of course you would. He accidentally steps on the rat and screams a little bit, kicks the cat out of the room. And here's my thought on this scene. Are you ready for this? Okay, so cats bring you dead things in the same way that a mommy cat brings their kittens dead or almost dead things for them to learn how to eat. When a cat brings you food, essentially, it's doing a loving act. So as much as Church has turned into a dick, he's trying to feed him.
He's like, you need to eat more.
Yeah. Isn't that cute? Your wife and kids are out of town. I see you're not eating so much. Burying me in the backyard. Here, have a rat.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Merry Christmas.
Okay. So,
the little girl has a dream where the cat died and blah, blah, blah.
Family comes back. Ellie's like, I had a dream that Church got hit by a truck and you and Judd buried him in the pet cemetery. And she looks at him like, I know what you did.
Can cats get shampooed? I hate that smell. Oh, God. Sometimes this chick is given, she's really cute, got an award for being an adorable mm-hmm. kid. But when she talks she might be my Jeff Goldblum for this film. If she talks too long, I'm just like, okay, somebody thought she was way cute and was like, give that kid dialogue. She can deliver some dialogue. And I'm like,
she can deliver some dialogue. Maybe if she talked like this, can cats get shampoos?
Yeah, I probably would have liked it better. Anyways, he's like, you can tell he's feeling guilty. He's like, I'll pay for a fancy shampoo.
Mm-hmm.
We're a minute 41, guys.
Yeah. And then we see Missy Dandridge writing a note.
Oh, in the my exact handwriting. It's my exact handwriting. It stinks. My cursive handwriting is what she writes this in.
But there is a difference between you and Missy.
What's that?
Missy is not married.
That's true.
Yeah.
But I also didn't marry a doctor.
It's okay. Do you have stomach pains?
No.
Well, then you don't need a doctor.
Yeah. I beg to differ.
But she does pin the note to herself, which I thought was, you know, very, it was accommodating. Like, people see her and they're like, oh, there's a note pinned to her.
She hung herself on purpose. Mm-hmm. This wasn't an accidental hanging. Good job, Missy.
You know, those random nooses that you, I mean, everybody has nooses just hanging around their house, and you have to put up a noose, right? So, but you have to like be on something. So you don't want to like make people think that the hanging. Sorry, I was going down a road.
I have an entire room full of nooses. If I accidentally did one of these jerky pratfalls that happened at least four times in this film, I might accidentally slip and put my head through a noose.
Yeah, she just wanted to make sure that people knew that this random hanging was not an accident.
Now, she doesn't verbalize it, but I'm going to read you the suicide note. It's very short. I'm going to try my best to do a Maine accent. Are you ready? I am sure I have cancer. I cannot face the pain. Sorry. There's a full stop after sorry. It's a full sentence.
Yeah.
Which I think is lovely. But here's the thing. Hanging harness is obvious. Whenever there's a hanging scene, I inevitably look to... if you're hanging from your neck, the bend is at the neck, right? Mm-hmm. But, and we have two of these in this movie. You'll see the person hanging is being supported from mid-shoulder. It's an obvious hanging apparatus, and right. I get why they need it for safety, but when they're just like, no, hang your head all down awkward and make it super obvious that the rope is through your clothes.
Right.
I'm like, let's go to the funeral.
Stephen King is the minister.
He delivers a doxology that my church still uses today.
Yeah. And so it's Lewis and Judd and Ellie who are at the funeral, and they both, you know, they go back to the car, and
Mom's been real sick ever since she found about Miss Missy or whatever she actually called her. She's been in bed throwing up.
Yeah. And Judd asks Lewis, "How's the cat?" And Lewis is like, "It's not my cat. It's Ellie's cat." "No, it's your cat now."
Great.
Yeah.
We've established that her mother has fragile mental health. We've established that dude is responsible for the cat. I mean, except for the cameo, this scene could burn. I don't mind. Yeah. Okay. So then we cut to the living room, right? Is that right?
Is that right?
We go from the funeral to the living room.
I'm trying to
think. She walks in.
Sorry, my last note was just a point about the book. In the book, Judd has a wife, and she's like a really sweet. So like both Judd and his wife are kind of like additional grandparents to these kids, and Ellie has like a really good connection with the two of them. And so it's Judd's wife who ultimately dies because she has arthritis, and they know that it's coming and everything.
So she dies of the arthritis.
Yeah. There's like some. It's her heart. It was arrhythmia. So I was thinking arthritis. Never mind. So Norma Crandall, that's her name. She ends up dying. Ellie is like one of the last, she like sees her before she actually does die. Mm-hmm. And this is like Norma's death takes place like an entire year after their Thanksgiving, because it's on Halloween of the following year. So like they move into the house, church dies Thanksgiving, and then that next year, so like an entire year like goes by.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So
King's books often expands over decades mm-hmm. of time and flip back and forth between those timelines. Mm-hmm. And so it's interesting to have this try so hard to be linear when it is not.
But like our relationship, like Ellie's relationship with Missy Dandridge is kind of, I mean, I don't think it's played up as much as it is with Norma Crandall. Yeah,
they don't interact at all.
Right. But Elsie has, or El, sorry, Ellie has a really like strong relationship with Judd's wife. And so when Norma dies, there's this sort of like, you know, she comes back and she's like, you know, death is actually pretty normal. And I was being pretty silly talking about church. And it's like after an entire year from her emotional breakdown, she's grown as like this little.
She's stronger than her mom by a mile and a half, if I could tell you that much.
Yeah. So
now we go to the TV scene.
Let me see. There was the shot of the Indian burial ground with Lewis and Judd in the upper right corner.
Yeah, like they went back to visit and be like, oh, nice. And then when I saw the scene, they're just a little blip in the corner. But I mean, when you pointed it out, I was like, yep, they're standing there.
Yeah. And then there is. OK, yes, it is the living room scene where Ellie is talking with Lewis about where people die.
But here's how it starts. She walks in, picks up the clicker, turns off the TV, and then he's like, is there something you want to talk about? And I was like, oh, hell no. I was a child at this time. I was like 5 years old at this time. I'm like, I would walk into the room and I'd be like, hey, mom or dad, can I talk to you about something? And then they would be like, sure, and or not, mm-hmm. or go away, whatever. My parents were very accommodating. They would have turned off the TV, or they would have said, turn off the TV, or we would have talked over the TV. But I, sure as Dickens is an old writer of some sad tales,
mm-hmm.
would not have turned off the TV on my dad.
Right.
And then expected him to have a conversation with me that didn't start with, why did you turn off the TV?
No, we need to have a discussion about why you just turned off the TV instead of coming and asking me to talk, because that's just rude. That's just rude.
It's rude.
Yeah.
It's rude. I don't know why it's less rude to walk in and start talking to somebody in the middle of the program.
Yeah.
But it is.
Right. You really, really TV etiquette, you would sit down and you would wait for a commercial break in the 19, you know, back yeah. before VOD.
Yeah.
But if you are watching something on Netflix, then you wait for a moment where there's like, you know, there's a pause in whatever they're watching and say, hey, can we pause this for a second?
I'll pause Netflix because you can just start wherever. And if you need to back up or go forward, that's fine. But TV? No. But that's all I care about this scene. Because she needs to have a conversation with him about death, blah, yeah. friggity, blah, blah, blah.
Where do we, Dad, do you think we still continue on? And he looks at church and he's like, yeah, I think we do.
All right. Let's talk about death, Daddy.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the other room where, okay, so he's comforting her. He's pretty normal yeah. about it. There's nothing super duper interesting.
Rachel's listening.
But she's listening and her eyes are glossy and she's mm-hmm. just been so sad and unable to talk about death. Mm-hmm. Why is she sad? I don't know. It could be death, but we don't talk about death. So mm-hmm. she's just going to stand there. I think she's drinking a beer. And she's like,
Well, she's listening in on the conversation, and then she goes when Lewis is in bed, she comes in, and you noted something about she can't have like certain amount of buttons.
She can't talk like at least 4 or 5 different outfits, and she doesn't have a lot of costume changes. All have the top 4 buttons of her long blouse open, and you see camisoles and maybe a bra or two or whatever, but she's just always free-flowing. There's a lot of chance slippage going yeah. on up there.
Yeah. And so she comes in and she starts talking to Lewis about her sister Zelda's death, which her sister had spinal meningitis.
Okay. Come on with this scene. Like, they have 2 kids. Ellie is what? How old? 5?
He says they left an 8-year-old by herself in the movie.
That's oh, Ellie. Rachel. How old is okay. Ellie?
Ellie? She was probably going to like first grade.
Yeah, so she's like 6 or
yeah.
7.
Yeah.
Right? Well, that means, and in terms of like what we're presented with, and please correct me if the book is wrong, but they've been together probably 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little longer.
Yeah.
How does he not know this story?
Mm-hmm.
How does he not know about Zelda?
He does. I mean, in the movie, he's like, yeah, she died of spinal meningitis. But he doesn't know the fact that, do you normally talk about deaths in your family?
If I've had a particularly traumatic event, mm-hmm. the person I am most likely to talk to about it is Jonathan.
I don't know if this is something where she would be open enough. I mean, the fact that she's completely like put off by death, the fact that she is, you know, she doesn't like even dealing with cemeteries, even though cemeteries are pretty natural. They're kind of everywhere.
What else are you going to do with it?
Right. So, I mean, it's like either she's just like, yeah, I had a sister. She died of spinal meningitis. And then she's like, and that's it. She doesn't really like go into the details, and maybe he's the kind of guy who, you know, is not going to press her on things if she doesn't want to talk about him. And that's the way that I kind of saw it, is that maybe she didn't want to talk about it because she wasn't ready to talk about
it. She avoids.
Yeah. And then it kind of comes out where she's talking about the story where her sister has spinal meningitis. And
she was our dirty secret in the back room. She delivers this scene either perfectly or far too over the top, and I cannot tell which.
I kind of like the way that it is in the book, but... You know,
you said it garnered a lot of sympathy from you.
For me. But honestly, I kind of sympathize with her even after the scene, because like she's like, I got left alone. My parents left me with her. And that was the night that, you know, she died in front of me. And I ran out of the house and I said, Zelda's dead. But I think I was laughing because I was so happy. Because
they were long suffering with this person who was having like the slowest freaking death.
Right.
And it is super sad. And it's delivered so incredibly passionately. And I would like to point that Zelda, played by Andrew Habasek,
mm-hmm.
is amazing.
Yeah.
Contouring. I wrote down slow clap, y'all.
Did you like the makeup?
Yeah. Okay. It's terrible.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
When you like, when I saw this, I opened up a browser and I typed in spinal meningitis, and you know what comes up? You get images of people who do not look like this, but you also see this image.
We're at minute 47.
only minute 47?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Because
I paused it to write down have a sex name. Okay.
And so Lewis is just like, if I never had
No, wait, wait. Oh, sorry. Wait, wait. Pop quiz time.
Okay. Do.
You've just had your spouse confess a great deal of information that is very shocking to you.
Yes.
What do you do? A. Help them seek a mental health professional. B. Hold and comfort the grieving and traumatized. Or C. Vilify the parents and then get her a Valium.
Well, considering this movie has already said a man doesn't know why he does things, I would say C.
You would vilify the parents and go get her a Valium?
Well, I mean, the setup of this movie, men don't know why they do things.
Good God.
I mean, really what I would think is you would try and comfort them in the moment and then tell them, you know what, this is something that maybe you should be seeking some help with.
Yeah, yeah. But I will take a moment to appreciate the fact that while he's just like, I have every reason to hate your parents now. Okay.
I would not be saying that to them.
He had a single tear rolling down his cheek.
Yeah. I'd probably say that if I didn't like the parents, but I probably wouldn't be saying to them while they're crying about their dead sister.
I think the scene was supposed to, like, the end where he, like, goes off to take care of her. It's supposed to show that he really cares. Yeah. But
this is very similar to how it happens in the book, by the way. He does the exact same thing in the book.
Totally believe it. But you know what? Let's go to happier times. Why don't we go fly a kite?
Let's go fly a kite up to the highest height.
Let's
go fly a kite and run into the road.
Sorry.
That's so sad. Okay, so they have a picnic.
Okay, so this is one of those smash cutty parts of the film where it goes from kite to truck to kite to truck, and you'll never know what's coming. And there's a trucker who's his name is Donnie Green. He's the actor's name is Donnie Green. He's credited as the Orinco driver. He's like Sheena is a punk rocker. Sheena is a punk rocker. When I first got this on a mixed CD from a friend of mine in high school, I thought it was she now is a punk rocker. She now is. And I sang it like that for years.
Great. Yeah. Should continue to sing it like that because that's great.
No, it's Sheena. I looked it up. It's by the Ramones.
I know, but still, she now is just as good.
Yeah, but what if she'd always been?
Oh.
I don't want to make presumptions about Sheena.
I don't know. I feel very punk rocker-ish when I listen to the Ramones. Like, you listen to the Ramones, and now you are a punk rocker girl, even if you're a guy. Yeah, Sheena is a punk rocker
and
girl.
And I've never been Sheena.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Anyways.
This song, because of this scene, makes my skin crawl.
Yeah. 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 That's fair. So it's all like happy and
I'm flying a kite, Daddy. I'm flying a kite. And we are doing it, Daddy. And it's so cute how he's talking.
Gage is flying a kite with Lewis. And it's just like.
And it's a beautiful family scene. They're sitting in a field at a picnic table. And Dad is off with kiddo flying a kite and walking away from the table. I don't know why the wind would be better further from the table. But now Ellie's getting like, I want a turn. I want a turn. And Mom's like, hey, let him have his whole turn. You know, yeah. Let him finish up or whatever. And she's like, And then
he lets go of the kite.
And she goes, do you remember?
I don't.
He dropped it, the dumb shit.
And here's the thing. The first time when Ellie says, Church is going to get his nuts cut off, both of her parents have this sort of like, oh my goodness, she said the word nuts. And I mean, if I had said that, I would probably have a nice sit down with my parents saying, you really shouldn't be saying that stuff. If I said dumb shit, if even now as an adult, as a 30-year-old adult, you know, my dad's going to be like, you know, Lydia, you really shouldn't be saying that stuff.
I would have had my mouth washed out with soap as a kid for swearing, but that's not healthy about our childhood.
I know.
Okay, but now my mom would be like, this, she would find a way to work it into conversation, if I'm completely honest. You know she would.
Yeah.
All right. So they're letting the toddler roam near the road again.
They're laughing. A child just said a swear word.
Let's take 2 minutes and just laugh and laugh about it. Sheena is a punk rocker, shifting gears and going. A punk rocker driving a truck.
I'm gonna go get the kite. I'm gonna go get the kite. Gage is walking away from the family.
And they're, oh.
And so the kite is going towards the road. And Gage is following the kite, trying to get it.
Okay, so Judd is the first one to see it. He's like, don't let him go near the road. Don't let him go near the road. Right? And then Dad turns around and he's like, oh. And Mom just starts screaming. She's like,
get the baby.
Get them at the top of her freaking lungs. And then he does this Terminator run where it's like, yeah. He trips. Oh, that's pratfall number three. And then the baby gets into the road. I got feels. I don't know how much commentary you got about this.
I could not watch. Like, I'm seeing the truck. I'm seeing the kid in front of the truck. And I'm just sort of like, nope, not going to watch it. Nope.
I've watched it a couple times now and I have feelings. Okay. So a single rolling bloody baby shoe is the next thing we see.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, before that, there's the guy's like, oh, and he's trying to stop the truck, right?
Yeah.
It's going full force straight and he's dead center of the bumper and the kid's looking up like, oh my gosh. And then we hear the crash. You see the rolling shoe. It's, okay.
Dramatic no.
Yeah, well, no. Before the traumatic no, you see the truck has flipped.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, okay, first of all, that truck had not turned at all. It was dead forward. And I was going to make a fried green tomato reference.
Oh, yeah.
But it's actually a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference, and I just now remembered it.
Okay.
I bragged to Lydia that I had a fried green tomatoes reference to this, and it's not. This is Hitchhiker's Guide 100%. In Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, when Arthur Dent is laying in front of the bulldozer that's going to bulldoze his house, and the foreman comes over and he's just like, he's asking him to leave, and he's refusing. He's like, do you know how much damage would happen to my bulldozer if I rolled over your body with it? And Arthur Dent's like, I don't know. How much damage would happen to your bulldozer if you rolled over my body with it? And he goes, none at all. And it's one of my favorite lines. because it's just like, dude, really, you have no power in this situation. But that baby managed to flip an entire truck.
Right. Hey, it's a baby that's being guided into the road by, you know, evil twigs. Sorry, I keep calling it that. It's the spirit, the Wendigo from.
The movie specifically tries very hard to, although it's an Indian burial ground, they step away from the folklore really fast, and I think it's a PC move, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
and the only time they reference the Wendigo is the sound in the woods. So they must reference it much more in the book. But they poorly, unfortunately, allude to this spiritual drive. Like later on, Judd is going to say that he's the cause of this.
Right.
Because of him drawing in this spirity thing. But it just looks like an accident.
Baby flips a semi and we get a dramatic no.
No!
It's not the only one in the movie, by the way.
And then we have a family photo. No montage is what I called it.
As he's saying no, we get these flashes of pictures. And then it transitions into Lewis looking at one of the pictures at his kitchen table.